So this morning, I would like to share with you some of the descriptions given by the Vaishnava Acharyas, particularly Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj and Sri Vrindavan Das Thakur, who are both the authorities on the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Descriptions of the meetings with Ramananda Madhavendra Puri and also his disciples. Because by hearing these pastimes, even though we're here now in this particular day and age with all of our worldly affairs on our minds, and we live in a world where we have to be practical and consider so many things, and so therefore our consciousness is spread in such a way that we have a little bit for our spiritual life, and that has to be routined and regulated so that we can fit in everything else. Then we have our family, then we have our work, then we have our desires and anxieties, and on and on and on. And so all these things take up, you could say, a lateral space in our consciousness, our awareness, and only a small amount is dedicated spiritually. So because it's like, you know, in lighting, if you get a floodlight, it floods the light like this. It goes everywhere, and it gives a good general light to an area. And then if you want a spotlight, then the spotlight highlights something, and the light is very focused, and you see that particular place. But if you want a laser beam, then you get all the light, and you bring it all to one point, and then it's very powerful. And that light beam can even cut metal. It's so powerful because it's all totally, totally brought into one straight line. So this is not really practically possible for, I would say, for myself and certainly therefore I assume for others in our day-by-day life to get any kind of intensity like that, because the mind has multifaceted to carry out all the duties and responsibilities that we've accepted. However, sometimes it's very healthy to come like this and bring everything into a very tight focus. Because by doing that, you gain an experience, momentary maybe, but you gain an experience of what it would be like to have deep, intense spiritual consciousness. And then, of course, the mind says, enough of this. It bounces back to all the other factors in life. So we can expect that also. But hearing about the meetings, or the experience of relating between great personalities, is like the meeting of two powerful laser beams meeting together. There's extraordinary spiritual strength there, strength that we can't even imagine. And when we hear, we have the opportunity to just for a moment gain some kind of a flicker of a touch of these great personalities association upon our own heart. And if we're very, very fortunate, it creates in our mind a sort of a sense that, a wistful sense that, boy, that sounds really nice. And if we get that, then we should know that Lord Chaitanya is being especially kind to us. So we should all hope for something like that. And if not, never mind. Whatever you get is so priceless that you should be happy with whatever you receive. So here I wanted to first of all speak a little bit about Lord Nityananda's meeting with Madhavendra Puri. Now I think you'll have to excuse this technological diversion, but I have more information on the computer than I have before me. So I wanted to see if I could find something to read you from there. So Lord Nityananda, this is from the Bhakti Ratnakar. Bhakti Ratnakar was written by Narahari Chakravarti, some good distance in time after the pastimes were performed. So sometimes there is some disparity between dates and times. But still the spirit, because Narahari Chakravarti was an exalted soul, the spirit of his writings is very in line with the Chaitanya Chaitamrita and the Chaitanya Bhagavat. So he is describing actually a parikram that's taking place in Vrindavan. And during this parikram, the person who is taking this parikram, he comes to a place called Shringhavat. which people who have been to Vrindavan, done Vrindavan Parikrama, will be familiar with. And interestingly, this place is a place of Lord Nityananda. Now, it's also the place where, during the Rasa dance, when Krishna disappeared from the Rasa dance with Srimati Radharani, he decorated her, he did Shringha, he put the Shringha, the ornaments on Srimati Radharani. So at this place, the speaker is going to get very attached to hearing and thinking and meditating upon Lord Nityananda in this very special place. So he's speaking to his parikramis about one visit of Lord Nityananda when he was in South India, to Pandrapur, which is actually in Maharashtra. In that village lived one sober brahmana who was a godbrother of Madhavendra Puri. That brahmana took Lord Nityananda to his house and offered him fruits and milk. The people of Pandrapur were greatly fortunate. By seeing Lord Nityananda, their lives became successful. Who can understand the Lord's mind? Seeing Vitalanath, Nityananda remained there in seclusion. So he's staying at this brahmana's house. He's a godbrother of Sri Madhavendra Puri. And one day, his guru, so whose guru is this? This is the guru of Madhavendra Puri. So one day, by the invitation of the brahmana, his guru Lakshmipati came there from a distant place. Lakshmipati was expert in all shastras and he had many disciples with him. Who can describe the loving affection that he had for his disciples, just as parents have for their child? Performing the most ancient rituals which cannot be described in words, he was a well-known saint in the devotional path. Who can describe the glories of Lakshmipati, whose disciple was Madhavendra Puri? Madhavendra Puri was full of ecstatic loving devotion. Whoever remembers his name achieves success. Ishwara Puri, Sri Ranga Puri, and many, many others were Madhavendra Puri's disciples. All of the disciples of Madhavendra Puri in Bengal and Orissa were devotees of Lord Krishna, attached to Krishna in pure love, in this particular spontaneous mood. Madhavendra was well known in the Madhava Sampradaya. He was an ocean of transcendental qualities, being very dear to Lakshmipati. So this Lakshmipati was staying at the house of his disciple, this Brahmin disciple, and he was accepting his food there, and he was spending his time speaking about Krishna. In the evening, while sitting in a secluded place, Lakshmipati sang the glories of Lord Balaram. With unflinching devotion, he prayed to Balaram with tears in his eyes. He said, "O Lord Balaram, I am the lowest sinful person." Just imagine, such an exalted person who thinks like this. And we think, I'm okay. I'm not too bad. You know, I'm doing okay. Everything's all right. But a very great personality has no pride. They feel this way. But they don't have an inferiority complex. And they don't have some psychological problems as feeling that I'm the lowest of all persons. They feel extremely peaceful in this understanding. So he was crying and saying, "Please be merciful to me. By so doing, your fame will spread throughout the universe." And after offering these prayers, he fell to the ground with tears streaming from his eyes. The state of mind of Lakshmipati cannot be properly described. He was an old man. An intense lamentation, he fell unconscious. He was unable to remain steady due to his profound loving ecstasies. Then he fell asleep. And by the will of Lord Nityananda, he appeared to him in a dream in the form of Balaram. And he was so beautiful. And Narahari describes the beauty of Balaram. And then Balaram said to him, "My dear Lakshmipati, my heart breaks hearing your lamentation. Krishna is the Lord of my life, and you are his servant life after life. Then Lakshmipati, holding the lotus feet of Baladev, he said, I pray that I will have not any other thought in my mind. Hearing these words of Lakshmipati, Lord Balaram said, in this village, there is one Brahman's son. He has come here. He is in the dress of an avadut. Perhaps you can understand who this is. He will become your disciple. Then Balaram uttered a mantra in the ear of Lakshmipati, who on receiving that mantra became very, very happy. Thus, after bestowing his mercy, Lord Balaram disappeared. So when he woke up in the morning, he had this amazing dream. He was very astonished. When he rose in the morning, he remembered the dream, when suddenly Lord Nityananda came and appeared before him. Seeing the luster of Lord Nityananda, Lakshmipati thought, what a wonderful bodily effulgence. I think he cannot be a human being. Because we have, you know, somebody, you can say to somebody, you look very bright today. You look very, very glowing today. But we don't mean glowing, glowing. Just like when you hear people talk about Srila Prabhupada, in many cases, in their simplicity, when they saw Srila Prabhupada, young people would say, he was like he was glowing. I couldn't explain more. He was glowing. And it wasn't even then that Prabhupada had aura coming out like this, like you see, you know, in a picture of Jesus or Mary. Not a halo, not an aura, but there was a glowing appearance. But when Lord Nityananda appeared, even beyond that, he actually was effulgent, actually glowing. So when Lakshmipati saw this personality, an avadut, just a wandering mendicant, he thought, this is not just an ordinary person. I'm meeting somebody here who's very extraordinary. Thinking like this, the sannyasi looked at Nityananda's beautiful face. Lord Nityananda offered his obeisances to the sannyasi, who quickly picked up the Lord and took him on his lap. Nityananda, remember, was very young at this time. He left home when he was 12 years old, so he was wandering here and there. So then, hearing Nityananda's sweet words, Nityananda, falling on the ground, Nityananda offered his obeisances to the sannyasi. Nityananda said again and again, please initiate me and deliver me. Hearing Nityananda's sweet words, the sannyasi was agitated and began to float in his own tears. Unable to disobey the order of Lord Balaram, Lakshmipati on that very day gave initiation to Lord Nityananda. After giving him the same mantra he heard in the ear, so Lord Balaram, he gave the initiation to Lakshmipati. Lakshmipati conveyed the same thing to Nityananda. Cycle. So, hearing his words, after giving him the mantra, the sannyasi took the Lord on his lap and became overwhelmed, his body trembling with ecstasy. The most merciful Lord Nityananda is very dear to Lakshmipati. What is there he cannot do? He is himself the fully independent Supreme Lord. And in this way, Lord Nityananda, the reservoir of love and well-wisher of the devotees, increased the ecstasy of the whole Madhava Sampradaya. So here Lord Nityananda is taking initiation to Lakshmipati, who's in the Madhava Sampradaya. So here's more of a link, so we can understand this Madhva Gaudiya link. So he became, you could say in a sense, the godbrother of Madhavendra Puri. But Madhavendra Puri always thought that he was his guru. And Balaram always thought that he was his guru, Nityananda. So this was the loving relationship between Lord Nityananda and later on in meeting Madhavendra Puri. So then it describes further that after that, Lakshmipati had a further dream about Lord Nityananda, and he became so overwhelmed by the ecstatic emotions that he was experiencing that very soon after that, he really didn't want to speak to anyone anymore. He didn't really have any interest in the world anymore, and very soon after that, he left this world. He left his mortal body, and he returned back to Godhead. He was elderly. Meanwhile, Lord Nityananda continued on. As Lord Nityananda travelled by the will of Providence, he met Madhavendra Puri. The body of Madhavendra Puri was imbued with ecstatic love of God, and his followers shared the same sentiments. So Lord Nityananda is continuing with his journey. He did not relish anything other than loving sentiments for Krishna, who enjoyed his pastimes in the body of Madhavendra Puri. What can I say, says Vrindavan Das Thakur, what can I say about the devotion of he who was the spiritual master of Sri Advaita Acharya? So think for a minute. Who was it who called Lord Chaitanya to appear in this world? So who can be the Acharya of Advaita Acharya? How exalted a person Srila Madhavendra Puri must be. So now, seeing Madhavendra Puri, Lord Nityananda fell down at once, unconscious on the ground. He was stunned in ecstatic love. And seeing Lord Nityananda, Madhavendra Puri completely forgot himself as well and became unconscious. Sri Gaurachandra has repeatedly said that Sri Madhavendra Puri is the original root of worship in ecstatic love. So after both Lord Nityananda and Madhavendra Puri met, Madhavendra Puri's disciples, at this time he was traveling with his disciples, his sannyasi disciples, Srila Madhavendra Puri. So his disciples, headed by Ishwara Puri, also became ecstatic and began to cry, seeing the exchange of love between Lord Nityananda and Madhavendra Puri. Just imagine what that would be like, seeing such exalted personalities. One personality is the Supreme Personality himself, and the other one is his completely transcendentally perfected, never ever having any worldliness in his heart, his exalted Vaishnava servant. When they meet together, it would be like an immediate, powerful exchange, because there's nothing in the way. For us, unfortunately or fortunately, because on the fortunate side, we're very fortunate to be here and to be hearing. On the unfortunate side, we could say, there's a few things in the way. We've got some static interruption going on in our mind that keeps us away from completely being able to immerse ourselves in loving exchanges with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But here, they both fell to the ground unconscious. They rolled on the ground, overcome by love for Krishna, and tears flowed from their eyes. Shivering and shedding tears and other ecstatic symptoms appeared endlessly on their bodies. This was because Sri Krishna personally resided within their bodies. Lord Nityananda said, all the pilgrimage I've done until now, all my pilgrimages that I have taken so far, have today borne fruit because I have seen the lotus feet of Sri Madhavendra Puri. Seeing his ecstatic love of God, my life has become successful. Madhavendra Puri embraced Lord Nityananda and was unable to reply as his throat was choked with love. He was so pleased that he was unable to release Lord Nityananda from his embrace. Just imagine if you were embracing Lord Nityananda, if you were embracing the Supreme Person of your love that your heart was completely given to. It's hard for us to imagine. It's impossible for us to imagine because we're flood-like. So we can't imagine. But if we could imagine what it would be like to imagine that Lord Madhavendra Puri is holding Lord Nityananda and he doesn't want to ever again let him go. He's holding on to him, and the more he holds on to him, the more he cries. And the more he cries, the more Lord Nityananda cries. And they hold on to each other in such wonderful, loving embrace. This is actually meant for us. This is not just that we're listening to something distant, something that happened at a far distant time to some extraordinary individuals. But Srila Prabhupada repeatedly, time and time again, tried to convey to us that this is what we're missing in our lives. And this is what we're looking for in everything that we look at in this world. we're actually looking for Krishna. And we see so many things, so many objects, and they capture our attention. And we feel like, oh, if I have this, then I'll be happy. If I get one of those, then I'll be satisfied. If I have another one of these, then I'll be fulfilled. But actually, we get more and more, and you can observe your life as it goes on. And if you find somebody who says, I'm happy, everything is fine, I'm very happy with what I've got, you find a humble, pious person like that. Still, says Srila Prabhupada, they'll have to die. Even if you are happy and everything is very nice, even if you're not miserable, you'll have to die because this world is full of temporary sensations. And these exalted personalities are not experiencing anything temporary of this world. And we, as souls, are also not meant to be only feeling and touching and experiencing matter. We're meant to become released, unlocked from our prison term in matter, and actually approach our true spiritual nature. They had many sadhus with them at this time, but never before had any of them seen such symptoms of love. Feeling distress by mixing with materialistic people, both Madhavendra Puri and Lord Nityananda wandered in the forest. And now meeting Lord Nityananda relieved their distress and aroused their love of Krishna. Lord Nityananda traveled for some time with Madhavendra Puri, and day after day they relished simply hearing about Krishna. The qualities of Madhavendra Puri were most wonderful. He would swoon just by seeing a dark cloud. Out of love of Krishna, he laughed and cried day and night, shouting, hoi, 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 Lord Nityananda. He looked like a drunkard. He wasn't of this world. He didn't bother with the protocols of this world that demand and rule our lives, don't they? You have to be this, you have to do that. If you don't get one of these, you'll miss out on that. You have to do this. You have to have a mortgage. You have to have a job. You have to make X amount of money. You have to have children if you don't have children. If you don't do this, if you don't do this. And so we go down the track, like the tram lines in the city. We go down the track of material life. And we never realize, or like the donkey who's carrying the load on his shoulders. And Prabhupada tells the story of the donkey in the rainy season. And there's grass on either side of the road in abundance. But the donkey is thinking, if I don't carry this load, and Prabhupada said, not a light load, a heavy load. The donkeys in India, their backs are like this from carrying the load. And he's thinking, like a donkey, why do I carry this load? Because I have to carry this load. If I don't carry this load, I won't get any food. My owner feeds me, I won't get any food, I've got to carry this load. And on either side, there's grass on the side of the road, but he can't see it. He can't see that Krishna is taking care of him moment by moment. He thinks, no, the government is taking care of me, my boss is taking care of me, security systems are taking care of me, I'm taking care of me, and look how much I have to work to do all of this. And so many people are depending on me. And if I didn't do this, then they might die. I can't possibly do this. And he doesn't understand. One time when Srila Prabhupada was in Venezuela, he asked a fascinating question. And when I first heard the question, I didn't understand it. And when I told somebody the same question that Prabhupada asked, and they didn't understand it. And I was interested because I didn't understand and you didn't understand. But both of us, when we thought about it, we grasped very quickly what Prabhupada was saying. So he asked one of his disciples, he said, there are so many people starving in hospitals. Why don't you go and feed them? So the devotee said to me, you mean we should do some food for life? No. Try it again. There are so many people starving in hospitals. Why don't you go and feed them? So the devotees sort of didn't answer very clearly. And Prabhupada then explained, because their starvation is under the authority of the doctor. For some reason or another, the doctor has said, you cannot eat. and therefore they cannot eat. And therefore you are not expected to go into the hospital and feed them. They're under the doctor. So how often do we as individuals not understand that we're under the doctor and whatever's coming to me is what the doctor prescribed for me? And then Prabhupada said, he said, starvation is a fact of life. And he walked on. Because there is a supreme Lord, and we forget this so easily, and we go anywhere to get some guidance, some direction, some kind of a, we'll look in the news, we'll look here, we'll look there, we'll look at the stock exchange, anything. But we won't go to this supreme master who's the master of everything. Any religion tells you this, that God is omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient. He owns everything. He's providing for everyone. Why don't we go there? Ask that question to yourself and you'll see that you're laboring like the donkey, carrying the burden of life and forgetting that on either side of the road of your life, there's plenty of grass. That might be a terrifying thought to us. Do you mean to say, I don't have to do all of these things? No, I do have to do all these things. No, you have to put yourself under the guidance of the Supreme, because everything belongs to him, including you. So Lord Nityananda was intensely absorbed in loving sentiments for Govinda. He laughed loudly, swayed to and fro, and Madhavendra Puri's disciples constantly chanted the name of Hari, seeing their extraordinary symptoms of love. The two of them forgot whether it was day or night. Just, can you imagine forgetting if it was day or night? That means I forget my meals. I wouldn't get enough sleep. I can't possibly forget if it's day or night. I have things to do in the day and things to do in the night. But they forgot. They didn't even know if it was day or night. And they didn't have the curtains drawn so that they couldn't tell. They didn't know. They were so absorbed in something else. Although remaining together for a number of days, Lord Nityananda and Madhavendra Puri felt that that period was hardly even a second. It went so quickly for them. Who knows all that took place between Lord Nityananda and Madhavendra Puri? Who knows? Only Krishna knows. Unable to give up the company of Lord Nityananda, Madhavendra Puri constantly remained with him. So they stayed together for some time. He said, I know that Krishna has given me his mercy since he's given me such a friend as Lord Nityananda. Wherever one finds Nityananda's company, that is the most sacred place. And the devotee who hears the name of Lord Nityananda will certainly attain the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. If one has the slightest envy of Lord Nityananda, Krishna will never favor him, even if he is a devotee. So like that, they stayed together for a long time. And then eventually, because they were both mendicants, they were both wandering here and there, they went their separate ways. And when they went their separate ways, you can imagine how much separation Madhavendra Puri was feeling. Feelings of separation for the Lord maintain a devotee's life. Now, how is that? Can you understand? Can you help me to understand? How do feelings of separation maintain the devotee's life? What do you think? As conditioned souls, that may be there, that we might get too familiar. So therefore, for us, separation has its part to play, definitely. Yeah, absence makes the heart grow fonder. There's another saying, right? Out of sight, out of mind. So we have to make sure we fall under the right banner here. Yes, somebody else? Yes, very nice. Thank you. That's the other point that I was thinking also. Separation means it's leading to a meeting. You know, in Bengali culture, I'm sure there's some Bengalis here, when you separate from somebody, you don't say bye-bye. You say, Ami Asi, which means I'm coming. I'm coming. So because there's going to be another meeting, because I'm separate, it means there's going to be another meeting. So I have to stay alive. Even Srimati Radharani, who was in the topmost mood of separation, that she would like to have left her body. Of course, she cannot. Her body is transcendental. But in her emotional state, she was feeling these intense feelings of separation. But how could she do something that when Krishna would come, he would feel pain to think that I had left? So therefore, I have to stay. So she was exhibiting, and Lord Chaitanya exhibited the same mood of Srimati Radharani, and Madhavendra Puri also exhibited the same mood of separation. That in separation, another meeting must follow. So for us, as Prabhu was saying, separation is because we might become too familiar. So we're also, there are injunctions that say, don't come too close to the deities, don't come too close to your guru, don't come too close to these sacred things, because you might become over-familiar and mistake the spiritual for the material. But this is for a beginner. But for an exalted personality who has no trace of anything but love in their heart, then separation acts in the same way. Thank you. In the way of bringing about the next meeting. And so when we hear also that separation is the highest thing, we should understand that separation is the highest, but it's not the highest. The highest is meeting. But separation anticipates meeting. And so the meeting within the separation is higher than it is even when you're meeting. And we can see this in this world also. If I'm thinking, I want to meet somebody in six weeks from now, I'm going to India and I'm going to meet somebody I really want to see, then I'm anticipating. If it's strong enough, I'm thinking and thinking and thinking. And so they're with me, they're with me, they're with me by my thoughts. And when I get there and meet them, there they are. So my inner sense, my meditation, my inner feelings, now they become externalized, because there is the person. But when they're not there and my thinking is there, then I can see them where they are not. But when they're there, I can see them. So they're there. So separation has this heightened anticipation, even for us. Practically speaking, the whole material world goes on the basis of this anticipation, right? The anticipation of what it's like to be married, what it's like to have children, what it's like to buy this thing, what it's like to have a nice car, what it's like to smoke this, eat this, do that, see this. The anticipation, advertisement is to increase the anticipation of something. But then in the material sense, when our senses contact the object that we've been anticipating, it's never quite as good as the advertisement. Isn't it correct? The advertisers have a way of making something sound like it's sensational. But when you get the object, the item, the whatever, especially in technology, you find, oh, that's just one of those. But it sounded wonderful. So this is the use of anticipation to make material life something less than boring, stale and lonely. We have to have some spice. But transcendental anticipation is transcendental to that. So transcendental anticipation means that I've already met, I'm already with the Lord by wanting to be with Him. And when I actually meet Him, then all my senses will become enlivened by Him. And Prabhupada says this many times. He'd say, you can talk to Krishna, you should meet Krishna, you can dance with Krishna, you can play with Krishna. Because to him, Krishna was as tangible as these small boys are tangible to us. Krishna was equally tangible to Prabhupada. Therefore, we take shelter of Prabhupada and we take shelter of Srila Prabhupada's disciples very seriously, wanting to actually come in contact like an electric, a live wire. To contact that live wire means that we're connected to the electricity. This is our desire, to also be connected to the electricity, connected to Krishna. Krishna's within us, but to activate His presence. So these things we have to think about. And when we're in a retreat, It's like meeting of Lord Nityananda and Madhavendra Puri. We're all together for one reason only. We're all here for the primary reason that devotees mix together. And perhaps outside we have something to talk about. We have some considerations and responsibilities and duties. But when we're in here, we're actually isolated from our normal environment and offered the opportunity to hear of something transcendentally uplifting, far beyond where we find ourselves usually situated, and to wish that I wish I could go upwards towards that. So this is the glory of association. Now, how are we going for time? I think we're almost finished with the time. 10 minutes, 25 past. Okay. So I wanted to also share with you how Lord Chaitanya also came in touch with Madhavendra Puri through his disciples. When he went also to Pandrapur, the same place where Lord Nityananda had been, and met Lakshmipati. Later, Lord Chaitanya, when he went on his sannyas travels, one of his reasons for going was he wanted to find out about his brother, Vishwarup, who had left the house when he was a young boy and he had never heard of him again. So he was curious to find out what had happened to him. So when he arrived in Pandrapur, he met one disciple of Madhavendra Puri called Sri Rangapuri. And Sri Rangapuri was immediately very attracted to Lord Chaitanya. And Sri Rangapuri and Lord Chaitanya spent much time together with the same kind of ecstatic love. And Sri Rangapuri told him that actually when I was a younger sannyasi, I traveled with Madhavendra Puri when he went to Navadvip. And I stayed with him in the house of one pious Brahmana, Jagannath Mishra. And I tasted sak. It was so good, cooked by his wife. I can still remember it now. So he was very much appreciative of his visit. And he said, and you know, one of his sons, he took sannyas. He became a mendicant. His name became Shankaranya. And he traveled here and there in South India. And he finally came to this place of Pandrapur. And here he perfected himself by meditation. And he left this world here in this holy place of Pandrapur. So Lord Chaitanya then revealed to him that this boy, this sannyasi, he was my brother, Vishwarup. And Lord Chaitanya in this way came to know through Sri Rangapuri what had taken place after Vishwarup left Navadvip. So Krishnadas Kaviraj tells that there are eight roots. There are eight roots to the tree. And what is that tree that has eight roots? The tree of love of Godhead. And who is the tree? What is the tree? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I'm the gardener and I am the tree. So this is very exceptional. And he says there are eight roots. Now, last year when we were in Govardhan, Sachi Nandan Swami was making one point, and he described a phenomena that I myself had personally seen when once I was in Germany. And that was that near Abentoir, where he was living at that time, where the temple is, there are very, very tall trees, very beautiful, very scenic area, very sort of mountainous, hilly. And these tall trees grow right up and up and up to catch the sun, because there's many of them. And myself and a friend were walking in this little forest across the road from the temple, and we saw that many of the trees had been felled. And we thought, look, they're chopping down all the trees. But Sachinandan Swami said, no, actually, these trees, he described, they had not been felled by a man, but they have fallen down by themselves. Big, big trees come crashing to the ground, knock other trees down, and many trees were down. And he explained it was because of something in the atmosphere has affected the root growth of these trees. So they're very tall up, but their roots aren't very deep. And so because their roots are very shallow, when a storm comes or some difficulty arises, boom, they go down. And they knock down other trees as well that are surrounding them. So this is also true in our lives. We see people who are doing very, very many things. But if their roots don't go down, as deeply as their branches go up, they can fall over in a hurricane. When a very serious difficulty occurs in their lives, everything can suddenly be dispersed. So this tree is not like that. It doesn't have shallow roots. It has deep, deep roots. And it doesn't have just one or two roots or a tap root. It has eight roots. Now, what does eight roots mean? Yes, eight directions. There are eight directions. This way, that way, that way, this way, north, south, east, west, and this way, that way, that way, that way. Eight roots. Just imagine how strong this tree is. So these eight roots are the sannyasis that were the disciples mostly of Srila Madhavendra Puri. And Madhavendra Puri is like the taproot, or he's like the fructification, as we said, the first sprout. So Madhavendra Puri and his disciples create the base on which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes took place. And then two branches grow up, powerful, big, strong branches. Who are those branches? Nityananda and Advaita Acharya. And who do they come back to? Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri and these other sannyasis. So this gives the credibility to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. And many of these sannyasis were actually in the Madhava Sampradaya. Brahmananda Bharati, Brahmananda Puri, Sri Ranga Puri, Vishnu Puri, Keshava Bharati. All these were sannyas disciples or associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this may seem to us like, okay, so what? I'm here in Australia, you know, life's good, you know, let me just relax and enjoy. But actually, we're in a spiritual society that's very authentic and authorized. And it's important to note that. Otherwise, our roots won't grow deep. And if our roots don't grow deep, then when the hurricanes of life occur, we'll just spin out. The Maya will come in and just say to us, forget it. This is just whatever, whatever, and your family is this, and you've got this desire, and let's get out of here. And we'll just lose the essence of our spirituality, which has to have these deep roots. So it's very good for us to hear culturally of these different personalities and how we're in lineage to them. And therefore, their mercy is coming up through the Guru Parampara. And therefore, if you watch Srila Prabhupada on any videos, we don't have any here, but even in that little opening slideshow we showed, he was always very grave and deep. He was not flippant and casual and light and relaxed and easygoing. He was very grave and very deep. So as we take on his process, we too will find that we'll become deeper and we'll become more. There'll be more gravity to our person because it will be gifted to us by him himself. And he is receiving this from being part of this bona fide Chaitanya tree. He says ISKCON is a branch, a bona fide branch of this Chaitanya tree. So we should develop, grow roots, grow branches, grow serious, and in this way our life will be very enriched and we will really truly see that the problems of life, they sort of slacken. They're just not so bad because we've got something better. So this is our gift, our heritage, and this is Srila Prabhupada's desire. So I'll stop here, and if anyone has any questions for a few moments, please ask. Yes, Prabhu. Yes. 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 There were two sides. There was the devotees in Vrindavan who were scholarly and Babaji, renounced. Then there were the devotees in Mayapur, Navadvip, and they were inundated by the mood of Lord Nityananda, Advaita Acharya, Panchatattva, and their mood is very much preaching. So after Sri Jiva Goswami became the Acharya after Srila Rupa and Srila Sanatana Goswami became elderly and left this world. Then Sri Jiva Goswami, their nephew, he became the next Acharya. So in Vrindavan, you'll find the theology. In Mayapur, you will find the process. So because these two things are different, the moods are different, of course they're parts of the whole, there's no difference in that sense, then Sri Jiva Goswami wanted that the residents of Navadvip and Mayapur, they should receive the teachings that had been written down by the Goswamis, so that that would synthesize the whole. And so he sent three prominent Vaishnavas with all the literature of the Rupa and Sanatana and the other Gaudiya Vaishnavas. He sent them across from Vrindavan. We know that's a wonderful story in the Bhakti Ratnakar, which is also described, when Srinivas and Narottam and Shamananda, all studying with Jiva Goswami, took the responsibility to bring a big wagon with boxes, strong boxes, with the literatures of the Goswamis over to the Bengal side. So there has been a bridge made. So the two are bridged in that way. And then those three Vaishnavas, because at that time, this was just after Lord Chaitanya had left this world, so they went to their own places and they began their own teachings and took disciples to continue the disciplic succession. And Narottam Das Thakur had two disciples. They were young boys. They lived in Shrikhanda. And their father, I've forgotten his name now, but he had these two sons, and they were very brahminical and saintly, but they were worshippers of Durga Devi. And one day they were going somewhere, and they met Nityananda Prabhu, and he preached to them very strongly, and he immediately convinced them. And they decided, since they were convinced, they had been sent by their father to go and get some sacrificial animals for a sacrifice that was taking place. Because they became completely convinced, they didn't go. They didn't get the animals, they left. They stayed with Narottam Das Thakur. And their names were Govinda Das and Ramachandra Kaviraj. Govinda Das Kaviraj and Ramachandra Kaviraj. So Govinda Das stayed in Ketteri Gram, which was in just across from Mayapur. You're going to Bangladesh, you can find Ketteri, where where Narottam Das Thakur was residing. And he wrote songs in the mood of Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. And then he would send these songs through messengers who would travel backwards and forwards to Vrindavan. So coming from Bengal, he would send these songs back to Vrindavan. And those followers of the Goswamis who were present at that time would become overwhelmed with happiness reading his songs, and they would write back to him, please write more, please write more. So we can perhaps hear a couple of his songs tomorrow morning for those of us who are still here. So his mood was very much in the mood of Narottam Das Thakur, who was also, of course, in the mood of Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. So there was a bridge created. Any other? Yes. Yes.
So like you said, like Madhavendra was the acharya to start off the
series. But Lakshmipati's mood may have been different because he was praying to Lord Balaram. So you see, there's two things. There's the mood of separation, and then there's the rasa, or the particular relationship that that particular exalted personality has naturally. So that he was praying to Lord Balaram, not to Radha and Krishna. So Madhavendra Puri mixed the mood of separation with the mood of worship of Radha and Krishna. Yes.
Just in reference to Prabhu's comment, wouldn't you say that because Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami were writing the book which will be the foundation of this entire Krishna conscious movement, in fact they were fully engaged in preaching, and that if we were to want to live in Vrindavan, if we were to have such a significant input into Krishna consciousness by writing in Bhajan, then Srila Prabhupada would probably ask us to stay in Vrindavan too.
If we had the qualification.
Yeah, if we had the qualification.
But they never didn't have the other side. You see, because we don't have the qualification, our aspirations tend to be one-sided. You know, I remember when I was a young devotee, very young devotee. At that time in the society, in ISKCON, there was a kind of a mood, especially the Australians were all Mayapur, 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 and other parts of the world were Vrindavan, Vrindavan, Vrindavan. And it was kind of childish. It's like saying, I like my mother, I like my father, but my mother's better than my father. Factually speaking, there are two parrots that sit up in a tree in Vrindavan on the transcendental level, and they argue like this. I like Radha, I like Krishna. But that's up here. But when we argue, I like this one, I like that one, because we're not yet purified, we always have to balance with the other side. Because the process of purification is easily given in Mayapur. And the realization, the realized state of consciousness is given in Vrindavan. There's a link between the two. If we miss out on the link, then we may take a lot longer to get to Vrindavan than if we go there directly, because we need that. It's essential to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. To get the mercy of anyone else, you must get the mercy first of Lord Chaitanya. So they're linked. So if you take one or the other, then you have to take the other one as well. They're both there. But someone may have a preference, and it may be a genuine preference, but that should mature into a deep understanding rather than just being a sort of a, I like my mother, I like my father, according to my nature. Yes.
Develop the literature on which all the preaching will be later on done.
Yes. Yes, yes. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And if we had that instruction...
Based on that, other people were made to preach. So
yes, yes. Yes, yes. That's there. But they were completely under instruction. If we have an instruction, then we have to carry out that instruction. And during that instruction, you'll find there are many austerities in carrying out an instruction. But generally, my point is that at an immature stage, it's not necessarily an instruction, it's an inclination. And that inclination requires the purification of the preaching as well. That's all. Yes. Any other points? Yes. Last one. When Krishna enacts his pastimes in the heart of Madhavendra Puri, is that what you're asking? In the body of Madhavendra Puri. Well, it's sometimes I've heard that for a conditioned soul in a mundane material body, he's traveling in the material world. The body is like a machine, right? He's traveling in this machine. And alongside of him, like two birds on a tree, is the Paramatma. But the Paramatma, or the Supreme Lord in this particular form, he doesn't perform, you could say, any transcendental pastimes. He witnesses. He's the witnesser, and he gives the fruit, and he gives the inspiration, what you wanted to do. He remains neutral. But once one actually really deeply, deeply wants to surrender to Krishna, what to speak of somebody who's fully surrendered to Krishna, then the Paramatma has no function anymore, and Krishna himself directs that person. So Krishna resides within us already, but in this form, partial form, because we're within matter, trying to enjoy with him at our back. But when we turn to want to love him, then he resides within the heart. And Prabhupada says you can see him, just like now, anyone in this room can easily watch television. Sanjay could see Krishna within his heart like a television. Prabhupada uses this example. And he says that we could see Krishna within the heart like a television. But more than that, obviously, because television is a mechanical arrangement of tubes and batteries. So, but like that, for our understanding, Krishna would be visible to one. And therefore, a transcendentalist goes in and out of external consciousness. One moment he's talking to people. Just now, we're listening to something spiritual and we go out of spiritual consciousness. We don't even notice ourselves going out of spiritual consciousness and thinking about anything. So a transcendentalist, a pure personality, he goes in and out of transcendental consciousness in the same way we go in and out of material consciousness. Just imagine that. Because if you observe yourself, you'll see I'm sitting here listening, and then I get a backache, and I think, oh, I've got to do something about that, and I don't like the way that is, and that was a really, and my mind wanders all the time. So his mind wanders all the time, but it wanders the other way. It wanders towards Krishna. So he's talking, and suddenly he's not there. And you're sort of like, excuse me. Just like, we're not there. He's not there, but he's somewhere else. We're here. So he goes in and out of transcendental inner consciousness, half inner consciousness, where he's aware of the external world and the internal world, and external consciousness, where he's aware of this world. But at any moment, he can go into inner consciousness and he's not aware of anything. And we would think that sounds awful. That would be like being an epileptic and you're driving down the road and all of a sudden you're not aware of the road and you have a car accident. But no, because he's aware of Krishna. He's aware of Krishna's love. He's aware of transcendental pastimes. So it's totally different. That's all we can say. It's totally different. You take any analogy and multiply it by unlimited and you can understand. They can go, they can have paternal ras, they can see Krishna with paternal feelings, they can see Krishna with friendly feelings, they definitely can have rasa of servitude, but they didn't see Krishna in the mood of Radha and Krishna, because Radha was not there. So one rasa is removed from their experience. Yes, available according to their transcendental maturity, spiritual advancement and realization. But Radha was not there. So they could do everything, but Radha was not there. Yeah. All right. Thank you.